It's hilarious. Okay. Hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of In Search Of. This is episode 5, I think. Anyway, it's the episode about killer bees, and we're going to chat about it. Bob and I thought it was great. Bob and I thought the exact same thing about the beginning of this. I loved it. It ties in with the very first episode with the lady that they torture by cutting her finger open and seeing if the plants, the producer, they cut the producer's finger open to see if the plants empathize with her. And seeing that lady just panic is brilliant. This is starts off with the same sort of thing. It has a, it's cold open or whatever they're going to call it, is the beekeeper, a beekeeper going in to deal with the killer bees and going, oh, apparently I haven't protected myself well enough. They've gotten into my hood. Now there's one. Oh, now there's two stinging me. One stinging me in the ear. And he's complaining about it. And we both, Bob and I, thought he reminded us of Julia Child's skit on SNL when he I've cut the dickens out of my finger. And he's bleeding all over the place. The character playing Julia Child's. It's a great skit if you haven't watched that skit. But this whole beginning piece is just funny with the beekeeper and the bees and how, oh, they're on me and they're doing this and they're doing that. And later on, we get to revisit part of some of that when he's like, oh, I can feel them smacking into my chest and so forth. But Bob, what did you think about the episode in general, but also that opening? Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was, I don't know if it was his voice or whatever. It just reminded me, or the way he was saying it, that was the first thing that popped into my head.
So, and if it popped into both our heads separately, that's pretty amazing that we both went back to the same Saturday Night Live skit. And it was something about the way he was saying, oh, they've gotten inside my helmet or whatever, and now they're stinging me, and with her cutting her finger. And I remember she was going to call for help. And so she reaches for the phone. Oh, it's a damn prop phone, and throws down the phone.
Damn it, it's a prop.
It's a prop.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the way that they're kind of detached from, you know, the big emergency thing that's happening right then. It's just completely detached and explaining it as they're going, you know. It's
like, oh, that's right. Yeah, yes. Oh, they're not like, oh my gosh, someone's out of my hood. Oh my God. You know, it's none of that.
It hurts so much. Yes, the pain is unbearable when it's stinging me in the face over and over again. And I soon could die if I keep getting stung this much, you know.
And he says something like, I was obviously underprepared for this. Yes, you were.
I was unprepared. I was. Yeah, in terms of the episode, it was interesting.
Now, my question
I think that.
So, we were supposed to be taken over by these killer bees in 1990 in the United States, were we? I don't know.
They did
arrive in the United States. They actually got that prediction pretty spot on. I had to read a little bit on it. About it.
I heard they were turned around at the border, though, and they had to go and remain in Mexico.
They came in through the wall. I hear is the
they did talk about putting a net across Panama to try to block.
Yes,
they
did.
That was in that episode.
I think they have got into Texas and stuff. I actually was just reading some stuff on them. And
yeah, they did.
Funny, and so they've got into Texas. They're trying, you know, various things to try to slow them down, and it doesn't sound like they've been nearly the problem that they thought they were going to be, though.
Right.
They've gotten into Southern California and Florida. It seems like they don't like it when it's colder. Mm-hmm. The bees don't seem to like colder weather, so as they move north.
Well, as I was watching the show,
Africanized bees.
I thought a couple things. One, the idiot who removed all of the security pieces that were keeping the queen bee inside the nest and let them go. How do you do that by accident and do it to all of them by accident? It's like, what is this strange doing here? I'll take this out. This doesn't belong here. I'll put them in my pocket or something. So that was weird. And then two, I was thinking, okay, so these things are violent because they described them being violent because of where they were from, that they were from an area that had all kinds of issues that they would have to deal with, and so it inbreeded them to where they became more and more violent over time. But it seemed to me like, okay, if they're in an environment that doesn't have those things, you would think over time they would become more and more mellow over the course of generations of these things. And so maybe by the time they reach America, that they won't be as killer bee-ish as they were before. You know, I don't know, but that's just what I was thinking.
I don't know. The gist I got from this was that they were brought here to breed, to try and make bees that produced more honey.
Correct.
They have better survivability
in every way, right? They're more violent, but they also produce more honey, and they're also more active. But go ahead, Matt, you were saying.
But it sounds like all they did was breed asshole bees, because they said the so-called killer bees, the Africanized honeybees, actually produce less honey and less wax than normal European style, you know, the normal European bees. They don't actually have more venom. They're not more deadly. They're just jerks. The only thing that makes them killer bees, they're far more likely to swarm. They're far more aggressive. They'll pursue, as a swarm, they'll pursue further from their nest than another bee would. And something about when they sting, they release a pheromone that pisses off. If they weren't already mad, as soon as they sting, they release a pheromone that makes all their friends mad.
Right. And it's been for a really long time. It makes their friends mad too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's saying that it's other hives too. So it's not like just if you mess with one hive and then that hive maybe swarms out and starts attacking you. It's like the pheromone, other hives around get whiff of it and they want to join in on the fight too, you know, even though nothing's happened at their hive.
Yeah. Well, then when they said 300 people at that time, 300 people had died from bee stings down the woods. Seemed like a lot, but anyway, yeah.
The thing is, though, they were talking about how they didn't think they could use them in agriculture, but obviously South America still, when we get all of our fruits and vegetables from them during this time of the year, when it's cold up here, it's looking down there. So they must be still being able to use them to pollinize.
Well, and they're Africanized honeybees, so, you know, it's the honeybees that they have in Africa, and they have agriculture and grow stuff in Africa, and, you know, so...
Yeah.
So maybe, I think in the 70s, it was really, people were really nervous about it. I remember it, people being like really uptight about it.
I definitely thought killer bees were going to be a much bigger deal. I remember as a kid thinking that this killer bees were going to be a big important thing to be worried about. I also thought quicksand was going to be a bigger thing, but you know.
Quicksand.
Well, you know, I'm
waiting for the quicksand episode of In Search of Quicksand.
That's next.
Let's put our producer in the quicksand and see if they sink.
You know, I saw some killer bees though in my backyard earlier this summer, but the murder hornet came in and killed them off, and so it was a problem.
Murder hornet has solved everything. Yes, yes.
That's right.
Gosh. Well, I would say Jim was mentioning, I'm not sure whether it was on the podcast or off, who knows, that he was like, well, killer bees for an episode doesn't seem, you know, like Bermuda Triangle, Bigfoot. It's like really killer bees episode. But I thought this was an entertaining episode and a decent watch. So it wasn't bad. And of all of them, probably I would be most interested in seeing a follow-up to this one and going into what actually happened with the killer bees and so forth. Even more than
Bermuda
Triangle, probably.
If they'd actually found Atlantis or Bigfoot, we probably would have heard about that. But like the bees, it's interesting to know where that went.
Yes.
Yeah. This is real science. This is, you know, real tangible stuff. The bees,
What are you saying about the Bermuda Triangle, man?
What about Bigfoot? Bigfoot's real. He's got a screensaver of him right behind him.
I mean, there's a picture of him right behind him. He's not real.
He's there with Bob as we speak.
Yeah.
And he's in beef jerky commercials.
Yeah. Messing with Sasquatch.
And he's with the Henderson.
Same thing, right?
You know, he really is trying hard to believe in himself now. He's really upset that you don't believe it.
I know.
Anyway, moving forward. So
moving forward is not something we're very good at. Come on, man.
No, I like I said, I thought this episode was more interesting than I thought it was going to be. What, as an episode of the series, of the time. I mean, whatever. What did you guys think of this episode as compared to Bermuda Triangle, Bigfoot, all those ones we've had recently? Bob, did it hold up to them? Or
I actually enjoyed it. I mean, there's not much mystery per se, but it was kind of scary for people at the time. I think that's probably why they did it. Sure. They didn't know what was going to happen. And I was with you. I was like, I almost thought the guy released him on purpose. I'm like, how do you take, I could see one hive, maybe you take the screen off, but he let the whole freaking, all of the hives go.
Well, and the fact that, you would think, they have visiting scientists from all over the world come and look at their hives and things. You would think, one thing you might want to remember, don't move the metal plate thing. Leave that where it is, because this is what we're doing with that. It's pretty much a solo important thing for you to remember. You can pretty much do anything else you want. If you want to go out there naked and get killed by the killer bees, do whatever you want, but do not remove the freaking metal plate. And
don't release the killer bees.
I can understand how that was removed and somebody could remove it, though. I mean, could you imagine just somebody goes out there and sees the bees having to struggle to get through this little mesh thing, and it's like, oh yeah, they can barely fit in there, and it's causing problems for them getting in and out of the thing. Let's just remove this so they can get in there, and it opens it up so they can get in and out without having to deal with this. And so they pull them all off, not realizing that.
But wouldn't you ask somebody, why do you guys have this stupid metal thing here? It's blocking them from getting in and out.
Daryl said their site is go down that one spot just to study these bees. It's not like, oh, you're coming, you're a regular beehive guy, you're coming down to get the honey or whatever. You're talking
Brazil, out in the middle of nowhere probably, and they probably have people that work there and do various things and are not scientists and don't know all the sciencey stuff behind it. And so, just one of those hands or one of those people working could have been responsible for that.
Yeah, I guess. Weird. Anyway, I guess we'll leave it there unless anybody has anything else to add, because I don't want to have our intro go too long because we actually have the show. Oh, and by the way, if you're listening to our intros to In Search Of, I know you love us and that's great, but the actual episode follows this always. But our discussions are usually longer than the episode. The episodes are 22 minutes long and our discussion usually is anywhere from, who knows, 20 to 30 minutes before the episode. But it's all good. Enjoy the episode and we'll see you guys next time for more In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. Oh, one more thing I'll point out. I like at the end of this episode, and I think it's at the end of every episode, you get to actually see Leonard Nimoy come on camera and talk to you on camera, which is kind of nice to see Leonard Nimoy from the time frame. And I love the quality of these episodes lately, but go ahead, Jim.
He doesn't do that much anymore.
No, you don't see him nearly as often as you used to.
I haven't seen him on anything in a while.
No, nothing in the last few years. Anyway, we'll move on from there. See you guys all next time. Bye.
A deadly bee is spreading northward toward the United States. A scientific test of their aggressiveness was attempted in Brazil by bee expert Dr. Norman Gehry.
500 bees or so have already come out. They're hitting my legs like crazy. I think we're overdoing this one for sure. They're all over my ankles. I'm going to have to move out. One stinging me through the top of the head. I wasn't prepared for the kind of action we're getting here. One just got inside my veil. They're absolutely all over me. One's inside, two are inside my veil. One's stinging the ear. I wasn't prepared for this one.
For 9,000 years, honeybees like these have served man willingly. Now that peaceful relationship is threatened by intruders. This series presents information based in part on theory and conjecture. The producer's purpose is to suggest some possible explanations, but not necessarily the only ones, to the mysteries we will examine. The majestic hills that surround Rio de Janeiro usually protect this beautiful city from the jungles beyond. On September 16th, 1965, however, a swarm of killer bees attacked in downtown Rio. In their frenzy, they bombarded anything that moved. Sixty people were badly stung.
A fierce new breed of honeybee now threatens the once happy partnership between man and bee. It is a threat, however, that must be met with understanding, not fear.
Frightening as it seems, the killer bee deserves our respect. It works harder, lives longer, breeds faster, and produces up to twice as much honey as other bees. To comprehend the behavior of killer bees, we must look first at the European honeybee, common in the United States. Dr. Norman Gary is an expert in bee behavior. To him, the complex and usually unseen world within a beehive is a familiar yet ever fascinating place. Ordinary smoke pacifies the bees, allowing a close inspection of the hive. Inside lies a highly organized insect society. Bees, in fact, are among the most social of all living things. The pure beeswax combs, composed of thousands of geometric cells, form an intricate housing unit. Certain cells store pollen and honey. Others are used as brood chambers to raise new bees. Most of the hive is made up of workers, each with a special job to perform. Some workers do nothing but fan their wings at the hive's entrance. They are the air conditioning unit, fanning tirelessly to ventilate the hive, maintaining an even temperature. Other bees work at keeping the hive clean or in building and repairing the vital combs. No bee is ever without a job. The work of maintaining the hive is continuous. Mortician bees specialize in removing the bodies of dead bees. One way or another, deceased workers are unceremoniously cast away. At the center of every hive is a larger, dominant bee, the queen. Constantly surrounded by a coterie of attendants that does nothing but feed and groom her, the queen is literally mother of the hive. She exudes powerful odors, or pheromones, that give the workers a sense of communal security and ensure that no new queens will be bred. Yet her most important role is as the hive's sole egg layer, up to 1,500 eggs each day. For 3 weeks, the new eggs develop and grow. The bees emerge as fully formed adults. Each new bee chews through the capping of its brood chamber, ready to go to work. A bee's life will last but 6 weeks. Yet before it joins the active hive, a young bee cleans its own brood chamber to make room for the next generation of young. Soon, the new worker bees begin the task of finding sweet nectar and pollen, on which the entire hive depends for survival. On returning to the hive, workers perform an intricate dance, which communicates to other bees the exact location of a newfound food source. It is not long before a group of workers has found the spot and begun the delicate work of collecting food. In a way not yet fully understood, bees can actually remember the exact location and time of day at which a certain flower produces nectar. On returning to the hive, no worker gains easy admittance. It must first pass the scrutiny of a guard bee, a specialized worker who is constantly on the alert for unwanted visitors. Once inside, nectar is given to another worker. Later, it will be transformed to honey and stored. About once a year, the population of a hive begins to exceed its limits. The workers make preparations to produce a new queen. Meanwhile, at least half the colony gathers around the reigning queen. It is a phenomenon known as swarming. Suddenly, the swarm leaves the hive. They fly away and find a new place to live. The bees common in the United States are derived from the Italian honeybee, which was deliberately introduced here. In Africa, there are also honeybees. In most ways, they are like the bees in North America. Yet in some respects, they are very different. Thousands of years of evolution in a harsh environment has made them a nervous, nomadic race. They breed much faster and swarm more often than other bees. They also work longer, carry more nectar, and produce more honey. Their unpredictable habitat, where sudden brush fires are common and predators in search of sweet honey are numerous, has given these bees a temperamental disposition. They live on constant alert. A sudden movement, a dark color, even the smell of carbon dioxide from the breath of a predator can send them into a stinging frenzy. Their alarm odors will draw every nearby colony to join the attack in a common defense of the hives. In 1956, at the University of São Paulo, this man, Dr. Warwick Kerr, imported 26 hives of pure African bees to Brazil. His purpose was to try to breed the perfect honeybee, a kind of super bee which combined the hard-working, high honey-producing aspects of the African bee with the docile characteristics of the European bee. The African bees were prevented from escaping by queen excluders, metal grills that allow workers to pass through but keep the larger queen inside the hive. Bee experts from around the world frequently come to the University of São Paulo. In 1957, a visiting beekeeper mistakenly removed the queen excluders from all of the African hives. The accident occurred at a time when the hives were ready to swarm. With nothing to stop them, the African queens and their colonies easily escaped into the wild. Hundreds of thousands of pure, aggressive African bees swarmed into the countryside. They quickly established wild colonies and continued to breed. Though no one suspected it at the time, the accidental escape of the African bees was the prelude to disaster. Dangerous African bees had been released into an ideal environment. Highly aggressive, they met little competition. Often they marauded native hives, killing the bees, robbing honey, and taking over their homes. They multiplied at an astonishing rate and established colonies nearly everywhere, in trees, under tile roofs, in the ground, in abandoned cars. Once gentle hives suddenly turned dangerous. The sensitive, easily disturbed killer bees were taking over. Cows and other farm animals were attacked. Thousands had been killed. Vibrations from tractors and other equipment caused savage attacks on many farmers. At the Church of Santa Barbara in Niterói, a wild swarm swooped inside during Mass, stinging the congregation. In 1973, firemen used flamethrowers to destroy a wild swarm which had attacked over 300 people at a funeral service. A handful of dirt thrown at them triggered the attack. On several occasions, the commotion of a soccer game has caused bees to launch mass stinging attacks on players and spectators. In 1974, in Recife, Brazil, Jose Ferreira was hospitalized after being horribly stung by a swarm of killer bees. Several days later, he died. In Rio, a wild swarm entered a movie theater, badly stinging the audience. In Curitiba, an autopsy found 80 bees in this farmer's stomach. Three fishermen barely survived another attack. Since 1957, thousands of people have been attacked and badly stung by killer bees. At least 300 people have died. Today, at the University of São Paulo, where the bees were set free, scientists are using genetics to try to solve the problem that genetics created. Using various types of bees, bold and intriguing experiments are being attempted. All are focused on taking the killer instinct out of the killer bee. One technique is artificial insemination. Drones, the stingless bees that fertilize the queen, have been collected from special hives. These drones represent an extremely gentle European variety. One by one, they are carefully removed. Each drone is gently compressed to reveal part of its reproductive system. With a special micro syringe, drone semen is delicately drawn away. Meanwhile, an anesthetized killer queen bee is prepared for artificial insemination. The syringe containing semen from the drone is inched into position. Slowly, the captive queen is inseminated. Her genetic character is thus deliberately altered by science. The queen is then introduced into a hive. If the experiment is successful, the queen's eggs will bear a gentler bee. The hive will become less aggressive. Yet such experiments have had little impact. 90% of all killer bees live and breed in the wild, completely uncontrolled. Another attempt to solve the killer bee problem has been to produce mutant bees by exposure to high radiation. A mutant bee, which is physically unable to sting, has been produced recently. It may offer some hope for the future. In the movie Savage Bees, Dr. Norman Gary reenacted an actual killer bee attack. The death of a single bee releases a chemical odor that drives a nearby swarm into a killing frenzy.
The escape of this bee near São Paulo in 1957, the bees have rapidly migrated throughout most of South America. They're presently going through the Guianas, and they've just been reported in Venezuela. Should they continue their northward migration at 200 miles a year, they could reach the U.S. by 1990.
killer bees could reach the United States much sooner, simply by stowing away on a ship bound for our shores. In 1972, at Richmond Harbor near San Francisco, a swarm of bees was found aboard a freighter. Before they spread, they were destroyed. The world's top experts identified them as killer bees. It turned out later they were mistaken. The problem is that killer bees and the honey bees common in the United States are nearly identical. As a result of the Richmond Harbor incident, a sophisticated technique to identify killer bees was invented. Wings and other body parts of suspect bees are carefully dissected. The parts are then projected. 25 specific features are precisely measured and recorded. The information is fed into a computer for analysis and an answer. It is the only way known to distinguish a normal bee from a killer. When the killer arrives here, there may be an additional impact. Every year, honeybees are used to pollinate billions of dollars worth of agricultural crops. The aggressive, hard-to-handle killer bee could make this impossible. The killer bee now predominates in most of South America, and it's spreading fast, quickly liquidating the few docile colonies that remain. This year, Dr. Gary visited the University of São Paulo. One of his objectives was to attempt again a test of the killer bee's aggressiveness. Viewed through an electron microscope, a bee's stinger is clearly a formidable weapon. It is not a single needle, but a three-pronged drill. The main shaft pierces the victim, while two jagged arms alternately stab downward, pumping venom. The venom is contained in a large sac above the sharp sting apparatus. Once inserted, the stinger will keep working until all the venom is pumped in. Wearing a special protective suit, Dr. Gary began the test. All that was required to arouse the bees was to dangle a black leather patch at the hive entrance. Killer bees react violently to black. A second patch on Dr. Gary's chest measures the intensity of the attack.
200 bees are on the field. The patch now is being stung. There must be 50 bees already have stung this patch on my chest. I'll continue to get them out. This is the maximum response. So far, I have received no stings. I hope at this moment there are no openings in my veil. By now, there must be 300 or 400 stings in my leather patch. I can actually feel them pelting my leather gloves. They are coming out with such activity. It's amazing. I actually feel the bees hitting me. Made it about the same number of bees around the big camera. There's only one sting at this point that concerns me, and that's the one in my arm. I would estimate that the cameras themselves have at least 100, maybe 200 bees on there. Of course, they can't sting the camera.
Even as Dr. Gary left the hive area, the bees persisted in their attack. Killer bees will pursue a victim great distances, stinging all the way. Killer bees don't calm down easily. They remember their anger for as long as 24 hours. Long after the experiment was over, 500 yards away from the hives, even smoke would not stop numerous bees from continuing their attack. Killer bees are unlike any honeybee that we have known. Unless stopped, they will live up to their name. Steadily, millions of killer bees are swarming northward toward the United States. Scientists have suggested various ways to stem the bees' advance. Everything from introducing armies of docile drones that might dilute their aggressiveness
to building a giant bee net at the Panama Canal. So far, nothing has been done. When the killer bees will arrive, and exactly how they will behave when they get here, we don't know. For now, there seems to be little we can do but watch and wait.